You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Two one-act plays, Marcel and the Art of Laughter, illustrate and celebrate physical comedy. They are performed and created by Jos Hauben and Marcella Magni, two masters of the form, who have worked together on and off for over four decades. Their show will be at Theater for a New Audience's Polanski Shakespeare Center in Brooklyn until November 19th, and they join me now. Very pleased to welcome Jos Hauben and Marcella Magni to our show.
We are very pleased to be here.
Let's describe the story of Marcel first. Who is he and why is he here? Does he know?
Marcel is a figure, like a cartoon figure, that we wanted that is very recognizable on one level, and on another level, you know, stands for Mr. Everybody, mm-hmm. who needs to go through tests and who needs to, you know, fill in forms and who needs to show his physical and mental capacities to someone else who then judges that. So that is a very basic and universal situation. And then, you know, the way he deals with this in his old age, because he is, you know, he's definitely an older age, is like a child. So the grotesque humor and comedy comes from that opposition.
And what are the tasks he has to perform?
Well, it's absurd. He has to task, well, Marcello, what do I make you do in this show? Because he has a hard bit.
Well, it starts from something very simple, like answering question, like you have an interview about what you do in life. Do you smoke? And of course, I get it wrong. And then little by little, they become more about physical test. Are you medically okay? And then become more like clown test. Like we have a horse routine. We have a hat routine, and of course the gentleman does it, but not perfectly. And
that's part of the fun.
That is part of the fun. Yeah. Is discover the failure and discover the energy to try to win, to do it again.
We usually associate this kind of comedy with Total Silence, Charlie Chaplin, later people like Marcel Marceau, but you're not totally silent in your performance
at all.
No, do we talk? We say things. We have
two languages.
We have we speak in Flemish, in English, and in Italian. There is music, and then even though the films of Chaplin were silent, there was music. It'd be unbearable to watch without any sound. So we, you know, the audience would have the impression they were deaf. But I think they use this. They coin this thing, like, you know, they say it's silence because what happens is not in the words. You know,
but it's
the
also words, part of a tradition.
The tradition is like commedia dell'arte or any sort of mimed. I think there was very few periods in history where the word was actually taken out, and that was for many, many reasons. For it became just some sort of aesthetic form, near to ballet and stuff. But there has always been breathing, shouting, yelping, laughing, and whispering in any physical or like we say, you know,
and it's
clown
surprising
show.
That like I speak in Italian, and I feel that sometimes people tell me it was almost clear what you said, even if they don't grab the meaning.
Because they understand it in the situation.
Yes. In the situation, I refer to my grandfather as a figure that lived in the circus, and my grandfather used to play drums and late night trattoria, and he told me about the comedy. Yeah.
And we watched. Can I just interrupt? We watched. We were stuck in traffic just, you know, half an hour ago, and there was some sort of alteration between a bus driver.
Well, you were stuck in traffic in New York City?
Yes, we were.
That's
and we were shocked. We were shocked. We were, you know. Anyway, and there was some sort of dispute between some bus driver who couldn't turn his bus and these builders. And it was the noise, the level these guys could bring their voice up in the traffic to yell at each other, and their physical language, which was one between the builders of camaraderie and provocation and the other one of sheer anger. That's physical. That's visual. That was a piece of physical theater for us. And what they said was not important, but how this was happening.
So would that inspire you to come up with a new piece?
Everything. There is not a thing. There's not a pigeon taken off.
How did this come about? You're both listed as creators and performers. So did you just work it out through improvisation?
Yes, we think we took bits and chunks of material that have been drifting in our minds for a while. Stuff we've done before, we sort of reworked, you know, for 20 years ago, because we have theater careers. Together. We direct and teach, and I'm directing an opera in Paris at the moment. And Marcello just worked on a big text-based play. So we were saying to each other, "Hey, we're getting on here. We're getting a bit stiffer. We used to do this stuff 30 years ago in the streets, even. What if we sort of not say goodbye to our bodies, but give them one last chance to jump and leap and do all these gags?" And I always wanted to do a chase on stage, which is a very difficult thing to do because there's nowhere to run away or to hide or to jump on from. So we got somebody to make a scenography, an object that is on stage that permits us to run after each other, but be like in a playground, you're trying to chase a child around the climbing structure. And these things sort of became very concrete provocations for improvisations around themes, and then we sort of stitch it together. That's how we've always worked in a way.
In sketch comedy, improvising, there's a rule of yes and, meaning you agree with the premise your partner throws out and embellish it. Does that rule work here?
Yes.
Of course.
Yes. Improv does not work if you say no.
And also, here Joss plays very much the authority, the time. He plays a doctor. He plays the person that oppresses these men that is a bit closer to an incapable.
The idea of the situation, indeed, is that I represent the rule and the fun for
you're
the audience.
You're the straight man.
I'm the straight man, but also I'm very, there's two levels. On the comedy level, I'm the straight man, and he's the white clown, and he's the Auguste, the funny clown with the red nose, or he is the sidekick, like Jerry Lewis with Dean Martin. And on the narrative level, I am somebody who does a test and who inspects and lays down the rule. So the moment I'm off, or the moment he's behind me, he has that childlike fun of transgressing, of doing everything. So that has always an improvisational element to it.
And also, I contact a lot the audience. Yes. So I interact. I make the play something that becomes much more it's happening now. And from a Kafka kind of feeling at the beginning, quite mysterious, it becomes very much interactive.
And if you don't have that depth, the Kafka-esque depth, then the physical comedy isn't as funny.
Exactly.
Now, how did the two of you wind up together? You're from very different parts of Europe.
We met at Lecoq School in Paris, Lecoq School.
The International School of Theatre?
Yeah. And when we were 20 or 22, and then we went
to... Well, I understand that's a creator's school. What does that mean?
It is a school where you don't learn how to be an actor or a director, but how you learn, where you are stimulated to make up your own theatre, to make your own theatre with others.
Lecoq thought that we were authors.
We were your creators. Actors. So we never touch anything already written.
And
never.
He believed that the body knows things that the mind is ignorant of. But how does a performer discover those things?
By being surprised by himself or herself each time he performs. you can be physically sick, and once you're on stage, totally ignore that. You can be
overcome.
In life completely clumsy, and on stage completely eloquent with your hands. It's very fascinating.
And also the body remembers after 10 years when you do a revival, remembers moves. We've done a show in the 80s, and 20 years later, for the birthday of our company, Complicité, we did it again, and the routine came back.
Even though you were older, and your bodies had probably changed.
But also remembers detail that were not noted because they were physical.
Yes.
And you'll go, how do the body remembers after 21 years, like a text that is physical? It was shocking.
I always tell people, when they say, "Well, I'm a bit too old for this," I say, stop saying that, because you'll end up believing it.
How do you free the body from the mind?
You do a lot of movement.
By playing. I think
like
by
a
playing.
Child.
You by playing. There are physical limitations, of course. But when you get into there is something about playing that has the element of spontaneity. And spontaneity is the key of life. It's a sign of healthy life, I think. There is no self-censorship or there is no opinion on your own body. All that is not there. So you really interact and play and you forget. I mean, I've seen granddads play football with their grandchildren and they look young and they move well.
Is that the concept of le jeu that Lecoq advocated?
Yes, I think it's absolutely a
part
sort
of the pedagogy. You say that you must find in your own self the child.
The playfulness.
Yeah, the playfulness.
Homo ludens, like the Latins say.
Yeah.
I want my audience to know who I'm talking to. I'm speaking. It's Jos.
Yes.
Jos Halbin and Marcella Magni, who are the performers in two plays that they've created, Marcel and The Art of Laughter, currently at the Theater for a New Audience's Polanski Shakespeare Center in Brooklyn, only until the 19th of this month. So,
correct.
We're sad that you're not going to be here much longer.
Well, we'll be back. We'll invent something else.
Just let's talk about the second piece, The Art of Laughter. Why did you call it that and not The Art of Comedy?
Because I was a... I'm not myself a professional comedian or comic, but I have created, directed, and written shows.
And this is a talk.
These shows at the beginning, they were very simple, straightforward, absurdist comedy shows, and I lived in London and England, and we did tours for the British Council, and they always wanted an educational element, you know. And there I was, and these guys I worked with, they did not want to come anywhere near teaching, so I took that upon me, and I invented very simple and straightforward workshops that I did in Dakar in Senegal, in Amman in Jordan, and you know, I needed to find some sort of basic material that would work in any culture, and that had to do with moving and, you know, like any human being, sitting on chairs or getting in each other's ways or changing state or accelerating, slowing down, these things. And then sometimes they ask me, so what are you doing in this workshop? Our sponsors want to know, our politicians. I said, well, you can't visit them, but I'll do an open workshop. And I did sort of a talk, and one day somebody says this would work for a real audience. So I did it once, and it was just took off straight away.
Now, you've described performing all over the world. Can you predict what will make people laugh in any culture?
Well, in any culture, depending on how sensitive or not they are to certain rules or taboos, they will laugh with something going wrong.
And when there is a surprise,
there is no better laugh, Marcello and I here, when an audience senses that something should have happened and didn't, and we react on that. And that's the best, that's the most, the liveliest and the most spontaneous event. Yes.
In this piece, you describe to us what you're going to do, and then you do it, so the element of surprise is eliminated, and yet we still laugh.
Yes, we still laugh. But we do that to ourselves? My child says, well, because you're not there, in the evening I will cry. He says that totally calmly. And in the evening, indeed, he cries. And because he changes state. And then we say, oh my gosh, if we go there, I'll be all nervous. We say that in all calmness. And when we go there, we are nervous. And we switch from one state of being to the other. And in that split second, and it is actually just before, it's like a hypnotist or a magician, a little bit before, I have taken their minds to listening, because I am telling their minds, listen, I'm saying something theoretically. And for that split second, they're not following my body. So when my body then does something, they're surprised because I took their attention somewhere else. So I manipulate attention.
Yeah. Marcello just says that he's learned a lot from magicians and hypnotists. But haven't you performed some amazing card tricks in a show you did? You have to learn card tricks along with all of these other theatrical skills?
I was working in a show called The Value of Astonishment, directed by Peter Brook, we were also here in New York, in the same theater. And Peter wanted to have a little interlude in this story of light comedy, entertainment, direct contact, and also to bring to the story the fact that the main character had been brought to the performing dimension, to be in a circus. And I had to be taught a few tricks, very simply, but I learned magic. But what was most important for Peter was not so much the magic, but was the fact that I was in true interaction. I made the audience come on stage, and it broke the more serious tone of the show to introduce a lighter dimension. So then when we came back to the more tragic, the effect, like in Shakespeare does all the time.
Or like Beckett.
Mm. Exactly.
Yes, yes,
absolutely. You have performed Beckett together, haven't you?
Yeah, the opposition of the two tones is necessary. Mm. All the time.
And that is interesting because, Lena, you mentioned Kafka and before, and a gag is, you can make people laugh in a mechanical way, and then they go home and forget about it. And you can make them laugh, and they will laugh again next day by recalling it, or something else resurfaces. And I think a piece of comedy is worth something if it reveals a deeper humanity, and that's what Beckett does. And I said to Peter, why are you making this so funny? He says, because if we don't, we'll all die, we'll all commit suicide. Who wants to, you know? It's
also, there is the fact that in a way, not that we have invented a new genre, we feel that comedy, and I've done quite a lot of Shakespeare, exists only when you root it in a character that is much deeper.
And
we tackle age because we are getting close to age. And so that feeling, we started to feel it, and we wanted to give a dimension, and some people in the audience really come back. Thank you so much.
Yes, yes.
We and hear Shakespeare, that of course, had clowns in any number of his
plays. Of course.
We're pretty much out of time, but I do have to ask you one other question. Why do we still laugh when somebody falls? Somebody trips and falls.
Well, there's two things. We laugh when somebody falls. We laugh when somebody falls when we deeply and instantly know that that person is safe. When a person falls and we see instantly that they get hurt, we don't laugh. So there is some immense relief empathically that the fact that the art of slapstick is not the art of the accident, but it's the art of falling back enough, managing to not get hurt, and mastering in that instant of imbalance to refine that balance again.
Now, so many of these things can be formulaic. How difficult is it to keep them fresh for each performance?
I think before every performance, I train for an hour and a half physically.
Really?
Yeah, to put my body back in a position in which I can still fall and come up. Because at the beginning of the warm-up, I don't, but then I do. And also is the fact that Joss said, between us, there is a long history of theater, and that makes us buddies. And on stage, we don't judge ourselves. We play. Therefore, almost we help each other when something goes slightly wrong all the time. So there is a huge complicity between the two of us.
Marcello Magni and Joss Hauben are at the Theater for a New Audience's Polanski Shakespeare Center in Brooklyn with 2 one-act plays, Marcel and The Art of Laughter, and it has been my great pleasure to have them on our show.
It's wonderful.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.